Hello. Thank you for listening to this episode of In Psychedelia. As always, we are searching for contributors for upcoming episodes. Head to inpsychedelia.podomatic.com or the Facebook group to contact me and contribute something. My name is Nick, and I will be your host. Do you smoke cigarettes? According to the Australian Bureau of Statistics, smoking rates have been consistently dropping for at least the past 10 years. In fact, the Australian Institute of Health and Welfare claim that Australia has one of the lowest smoking rates in the world. So, what has caused this? Well, on the 5th of October, Melbourne's MX reported on an RMIT survey that found smokers aged between 18 and 24 found tougher laws and price rises could actually decrease their will to quit. But surely the reason why fewer people are smoking in Australia today has to do with the government health campaigns and the scary pictures on cigarette boxes and the rising taxation, right? Well, this is the assumption. I think that it is important to inform people and ensure that they have as much knowledge as possible in order to make the best personal decision. And personal decision is the crux of this. No matter how scary an advertising campaign is, whether it's the TAC telling you to wipe off 5, or Department of Health graphically showing you that smoking causes what I will refer to as a festy mouth, it always comes down to a decision from you. You are the one in control. We should know from the billions spent on drug propaganda over the past century that scare campaigns don't work. It should be intuitive to us by now. If you treat people like stupid dum-dums, then it is not that they will act like stupid dum-dums. They'll just think that you're the stupid dum-dum and consequently ignore you. When a government engages in stupid dum-dummery, then it creates mistrust in what ideally should be the most trustworthy organisation we know. And don't scoff at that. Ideally, it should be. I want to trust my government. The end of the MX article mentioned earlier has comments from the Department of Health and Ageing saying that anti-smoking campaigns had been successful, and that 99% of smokers spoken to for campaign research are aware of the National Tobacco Campaign, with 56% of respondents indicating they had taken action as a result. I don't doubt that people's attitudes to cigarettes have changed, and I think that the government has played a part in this. It's hard for anyone, including governments, to figure out where the line of usefulness is. I generally think that sharing stories among our peers and giving them a rich context for understanding is the most important thing, above any advertising campaign. It is through cultural shifts, not policy shifts, that attitudes change. Policy shifts sometimes influence culture, but if this is through fear or persecution, through propaganda and misinformation, then people are going to start feel like you're treating them like a stupid dum-dum. And we know what happens then. The point I'm trying to make is not that we should end all government health campaigns. I think they have their place and help to inform people. But when a health campaign relies on scaring the shit out of you to produce results, you might start to feel like the government is peddling nonsense and start to mistrust what they're saying. And the main point I'm trying to make, the best shifts in attitude happen through you. Look after yourself. Keep yourself informed and critical. Speak to your family, friends, and colleagues. Share your story. This is In Psychedelia. Coming up in this episode, we'll be chatting to Shane, the man behind The Mollusk, about his latest album Nautilus and the upcoming launch gig at Revolt Art Space. We'll also be hearing from Siddhak Eniyat. Helma speaks to Beck about marijuana use, and we'll hear a song from Christopher Syraver. Also on the horizon is the EGA and Lost Tribes tour, Origins of Consciousness, which kicks off in Melbourne on Saturday, the 13th of October. And Belgrave will be playing host to the End of the Line Festival on Saturday, the 24th of November, and they're still looking for volunteers, musicians, artists, and performers. Head to endofthelinefestival.com for more information.
Rainbow Serpent After Party. The stage was set, everything pointing towards a good night. All sorts. From trippers to the animal head. The party had it all. Well, everything apart from a muddy dance floor, that is. The trips were rustled, tickets in hand. There's always that anticipation of a line. Whether it's going up your nose or you're going through the door, you just can't wait for the party to start. We were in, The smell of drugs surrounded us in the form of scattered lasers through clouds of smoke. You could see it written on everyone's face. People staring off into the abyss, obviously off of some sort of psychedelic. Pupils falling from others' heads, speaking at a rate at which only every second word could be understood. The smell engulfed us like a newborn. The night was set for indulgence. My crew didn't bring anything to munch on, and so we knew what we needed to do. We started to mingle. It was at this point things started to get a little messy. I was quite drunk, to say the least, and finally, after about 2 hours of mingling, I found the goods. A random tripper in a top hat with a towel dressing gown as an overcoat. Psytrance party, the only place with such a being. "Hey man, was looking for something to brighten the night," he replied. "I got some K, should do the trick." By this stage, I didn't care what it was. Me and the boys had the coin and the alcohol said, "Do it." I had never tried this substance, and because it was cheap, I thought a big line was in order. I found one of my friends and we went to the bathroom for a tester. Racked up two fat lines on the toilet roll dispenser. I proceeded to suck one down and knocked most of the other to the ground. "Sorry, bro," I said, and he proceeded to have what was left. We made our way to the door in the hope we could find the rest of the crew. As I walked across the bathroom, the walls bent slightly in and the door moved in to the distance. This feeling of wonkiness started to bend my mind like the room. And I thought, okay, this is a different sensation. I made it to the bathroom door, my mate one step in front, and then it hit me. The wonk bent over itself and reality formed anew. I walked through the door and took no more steps. The ground ceased to be, and my legs disappeared as I fell like a sack of springs in a pool of what was left of me. There was no color left, only black with fine outlines of definition. A fishbowl effect, a bubble of a new world. People were trying to talk to me, but the sound reverberated to the point of a halfway mix between glitch and static. No voices were left to be heard in this world. These beings with their strange sounds stood over me, elongated giants rippling in the underworld. Minuscule pin-like legs formed into widening torsos with heads the size of planets. They looked exactly the same, like they were cloaked and hooded, somewhat like Grim Reapers, pure black with faint lines of definition. This black was not solid though, it was a liquid, or more so, paint. Like they were constantly being covered in it, layers slowly making their way down the features of the beings until they hit the ground. With each layer the beings grew, yet the definition faded. Slowly but surely, light was fading out of existence, and the beings were becoming it. Although no voices could be heard, the feeling of death was imminent and the fight for light was slipping. The last layer of paint washed over them and the beings faded from existence. I was left in nothingness, not a sound nor a movement, just a small circle of light in the center of my vision. And a voice telling me it was time, that the end was now and to let go of this reality. I accepted death at this point, and the circle slowly shrank. I knew the nothingness had become me. There it was, the last pinpoint of light disappearing forever. Life was over, and I would cease to be. Then, a miracle happened. I remembered a reason to exist. A thought came and saved my existence. The thought of her, the thought of love. As this thought entered my mind, the pinpoint of life and light exploded and the world was reborn anew. Through the wormhole of death and out the other side at what seemed the speed of light. Love had saved me from the darkness and once more I knew what it meant to be alive. I will explain that later, after I woke in the hospital bed. Yes, the dripping arm. It was not ketamine, but PCP that the stranger in the top hat and the towel dressing gown overcoat gave to me. There are always surprises in life, some better than others, and some a learning experience.
I love you, baby, I really do. I love those crazy, 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 crazy things you do. Those things you do, those things you do. Do what you want, but girl, but you love me too. Keep love me too. I need you, baby, in the middle of the night. I need you, baby, to hold me, to hold me, hold me, hold me, hold me tight. Lord, hold me tight. Not quite that tight. Quite that tight. Do what you want, but girl, but you keep love me right. Keep love me right.
Me and you.
true. Ah, yes, I do. Crazy things you do. Crazy things you do. Crazy things you do. All the things you do. Crazy things you do. Crazy things you do. Crazy things you do. Crazy things you do.
Swampy jungles of your cell-suit brain, there is a place that weary signals go to play. They meet up, splatter into each other, and go off again to tell your feetsies to get grooving, and the rest of you to start moving. There are some digital sharfolk out there who seem to have a particular knack for splattering signals and transforming cell soup into dance floor soup. I think it quite appropriate that odd-looking invertebrate ocean dwellers should be that which this particular digisonic manipulator should name himself after. And also quite appropriate that he chooses those tentacled swirly cephalopods as the name of his latest vibratory incarnation. September 1st was the release date for the Mollusk's latest album, Nautilus. The human being behind this creation, Shane, joins us now. Shane, welcome to In Psychedelia.
Hello. Wow, that was amazing.
So let's go back a bit. I want to go back into your history. When was the first time you can remember making a dance floor, however small, bop, so to say?
I thought I might actually tell you about the first set I ever did. Basically, this was like a long time ago when I was under the alias Liquid Fusion, fucking ages ago. And yeah, I went to play at this party, and sunny day, really lovely. Dance floor was pretty much empty. It was like the second stage or something.
Yeah.
And I got up there and I'm like, there's about five people standing in front of me, all tripping off their heads. And yeah, as soon as I hit the play button for the first track, immediately this gigantic cloud came from nowhere, and it just like, it was like I pressed a button to turn on like the rain. It was ridiculous. And like, it just, this huge gust of wind just completely fucked the whole stage up. Like, and I was like, this is awesome. It was so awesome. It was like, and this guy completely tripping off his head just came up to me. He's like, how did you do that, man?
That's a pretty good,
hilarious.
And that was your first gig that you'd played?
Oh, the first outdoor party that I ever did.
Wow. Yeah. And you got to play through your whole set without getting rained out?
Well, yeah, luckily the tarp off the top of the stage didn't fall off, but pretty much everything else, all the decor flew away, and it was ridiculous. It was like, it just immediately turned into a mud bath.
So you've had a few other, or one, at least one other musical endeavor, which was Liquid Fusion. What other sort of musical projects have you had in the past?
Well, I've tried to do a lot of things, actually. I was in a death metal band once. Believe that.
Was how long ago are we talking? Like high school days?
Oh, yeah, this is high school stuff. that was like just a stupid kind of project. Kind of, yeah, all joke songs and stuff about, yeah, just random shit. But yeah, that was one of the projects I've done. Did a rock project for a little while, playing a bit of guitar.
Yeah.
So
you've played a few different instruments, yeah, and before you came to producing electronic music.
Yeah. Well, that was that. That's where it all kind of started. Like, I mean, I've been writing for forever using my computer, but initially it started as just a complete joke. Like, me and my mates would just sit down and like make stupid noises and stupid songs about about stuff that we thought was funny.
Well, speaking about stupid noises, I think that's sort of, I wouldn't call the noises you make stupid anymore. They're quite unique, and they seem to be strewn throughout your creation. I guess you started making noises then, and you've gone on. Where do you sort of get these from?
All over the place. I do a fair bit of field recording. And I always, like, I have a fascination with, like, creating a sound from something that is completely different.
Have you got an example?
I made a bass line from a bouncing a bouncy ball. and I bounced the ball until it was like, you know, dunk, 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 dunk. And when it got to that point, I bounced it on a piece of metal. And it just it created this really fast, resonant kind of tone. And that tone, I took it to the computer and like worked it, like reworked it and like cut the pieces out that I liked most and kind of made like big, nice, sharp saw wave that just kind of goes and yeah, turned that into a bass line.
Wow. And so do you often find a lot of your sounds from the natural world, so to say, like you take out recordings rather than hit a synthesizer?
Bit of both, really. I don't really, I'm not biased, and I'm definitely not like a analog junkie or a digital junkie or anything like that. So yeah, I guess like it's all a bit even. Like I take sounds from everywhere. if you just write digitally, then you leave yourself kind of closed into a box where you can't, you know, I don't know.
Some sounds so that you won't be able to get, yeah.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing where, you just should use everything you've got.
Yeah. So did the name The Mollusk emerge from the sounds you were creating and they felt kind of mollusky? Or did you create some music first and then The Mollusk came to mind?
There's a few reasons why I chose that. Firstly, the Ween album, The Mollusk, is awesome.
Yep.
And I love that album.
I'm glad that it does relate back to that somehow, because whenever I type in The Mollusk, it comes up with Ween on Google, so...
Yeah, I know. It's really annoying, actually, because... I can't even find my own stuff. I type in The Mollusk Nautilus and then I just get a whole bunch of pictures of Nautilus. You can't find it on the internet at all.
So it was sort of partly inspired by the Ween album. Was there other things?
Inspired, but mostly inspired from sort of the textural sounds. And it was like I came up with the name after I'd written a few of these kind of first tracks that I'd done.
When did you first start performing as The Mollusk?
That was about 4 or 5 years ago.
Right, so it's been an ongoing...
No, it would have been 4 years.
So I'm sort of interested as well in a bit of your own musical taste and background. You've mentioned Ween and heavy metal and rock projects. So out of all the gigs and festivals you've been to, what was your sort of favourite musical experience?
Probably the Eagles of Death Metal.
Nice. Where at?
I can't remember. It's the one in the place in St Kilda.
Palais? Yes.
Yeah. That was just awesome. The vibes were just amazing. Yeah, it's just a really fun night, and it just always sticks in my mind. It's just being an awesome night.
And you've also,
but I mean, that said, like it's really hard to kind of say what, like choose one. Been just so many awesome gigs that I've been to, and so many awesome acts that I've seen. So
what about out of all the gigs and festivals that you've played yourself? Is there anyone that particularly stands out to you, or is it the same sort of dealio?
Actually, the Rainbow that I just played, I reckon that was my favourite set that I've ever played.
Was the crowd particularly wild?
Yeah, they were just absolutely insane. There was like naked people on stage, and it was ridiculous. But I mean, it's always heaps of fun at Rainbow. And almost never never have a bad set at Rainbow.
I remember your set a few years ago was pretty out of control as well.
As soon as I started, about 15, 20 people just stormed onto the stage and started dancing.
It was good, yeah. Do you often have that reaction when you play it at festivals? Because I've seen that happen a few times, I feel.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but for some reason that happens a lot.
So you've released the new album. It's been out for a little over a month now, Nautilus.
Yep.
You haven't played a gig for it yet because you've got an upcoming gig. But can you tell us a little bit about Nautilus, what the production process was like, whether you had any particular things you wanted to get into it?
Well, originally it was going to be a 22-track album, but...
Oh, wow.
I decided not to put a lot of it on there, because it was there was like a lot of down-tempo stuff. And so for anyone that's listening, it's going to be coming out soon. I haven't given it a name yet, but it's all the down-tempo stuff that I've been working on for the last 14 years. So.
Oh, wow. That's quite a collection.
Oh, not all of it, obviously. But
yeah. But your favourite parts.
Yeah, the favourites of those, the stuff that I've been working on. Yeah, I thought with the Nautilus, I'd just take the kind of more dance vibe stuff and, you know, just keep it rocking the whole way through and just make it into like a chunky album. It took me ages to finish it, actually. I was meant to bring it out like 2 years ago or something.
Oh, wow.
No, it wasn't that long, but ages ago.
But it's been a work in progress for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the problem with, I think a lot of producers get is that, it's very hard to say something is complete.
I've seen that problem a lot with people.
That seems to be like kind of for me. Yeah, it's. I always feel like, oh, maybe I'll write something new, you know, and then I'll think, oh, that sounds way better than the last. I'm not gonna put that track on there now. Like, you know, I'll put the new one on there, and then I'm like, oh, now I want to put. You know, and it keeps going like that. And
you just have to give yourself a time and say, nah, that's it. Everything that's in is what I'm choosing from.
That's exactly what happened. I had to just go, oh, Jesus, I've been like stuffing around with this for ages. I keep fucking changing it and like changing my mind about it. And
so does it.
There were so many people complaining that I hadn't released something and like, going, come on, when's this bloody release coming out? I'm like, oh, okay, all right, I gotta do it. I'll just put the best of this together and just release it.
So does it feel pretty good to have released it now?
Yeah, I'm really happy with it. And the response has been really good. You know, people have told me like it's the best thing that they've heard the entire year, which is like a massive compliment. And I'm just like, that's just awesome.
Gotta be
to
happy
hear
with
that positive feedback.
So for anyone that's listening that hasn't got the album yet and wants to get their hands on it, where can they get it?
Well, at the moment, it's available on addicttech.com, and very soon it'll be on the Omelette webpage.
Excellent.
Omelette.net.au, I think.
And we'll put
maybe
up...
it's .com now, actually.
I
can't remember.
No, that's right. I'll put up a link on the Encyclopedia website for anybody that wants to listen. And you've also got the launch gig coming up soon. Can you tell us the details of that?
It's looking to be absolutely epic, and it's going to be the first time that anyone will hear the album on a big rig. Like, I'm kind of saving it all for that gig. It's at the Revolt Art Space.
Yep.
There's going to be just all sorts of shit going on. During my set, there's going to be a live painter behind me, kind of doing all sorts of cool shit. It is going to be, it's going to be absolutely amazing.
And for anyone that hasn't been to the Revolt Art Space, it's sort of a cross between a venue and an art gallery almost. It's an interesting venue over in Kensington in some old sheep sheds that's been converted into quite an amazing place.
kind of a giant steampunk warehouse art space thing.
Yeah. And so when's the gig on?
It's on the 20th.
So Saturday the 20th of October.
I'm actually getting Rhythmic. Michael Scarlett is organising it for me. And he's doing his EP launch at the same night. So it's just going to be epic.
So it'll be Rhythmic's EP launch and your album launch. And there's a few other artists there. I think Mortisville, Cat Party.
Yep.
Monkey Mark.
Goosebumps. Goosebumps as well, yep.
So some
It is going to be kick ass.
Good Australian.
So anyone hearing this, go and buy a ticket because it's going
to
be awesome.
I'll put a link up to where you can get tickets as well. And Shane, thanks for coming on in Psychedelia, and I look forward to seeing you at the launch gig.
Cool, man. Thank you very much.
That was Shane, the man behind the Mollusk. This is in Psychedelia. If you want to find out more information about the Mollusk, including how you can download and details on the launch gig, head to insychedelia.podomatic.com or head to the Facebook group. This is the Mollusk from his latest album, Nautilus, Connecting Flight.
listening to In Psychedelia. My name is Helma. Recently, I spoke to one of my friends about her use of marijuana. I found that we shared some common experiences, and that some of the effects she had experienced were very similar to the effects I have experienced in the past. She agreed to share her story. Beck, welcome to In Psychedelia.
Hello.
So, just a bit of background information on yourself. When did you first start smoking marijuana?
When I was probably 16 or 17.
And as you started smoking more over the years and the intensity of your use increased, did you notice any change in the effects?
Definitely. When I first started smoking, it was just for fun, like on weekends. And then I think as it went on, I was smoking a lot more. And depending on how it was grown, I think that made a difference. So, and I think I was just smoking way too much. So the effects of it changed as well.
Sure. What were the differing effects you found in relation to the different ways that it was grown?
I just think sometimes if it was hydroponic, maybe it was way too strong.
Sure.
And then other times I had smoked it and it was laced with stuff that I didn't know. And then later on people told me that it was laced with stuff. So I think that made a huge difference as well.
What are some pivotal experiences that you had on marijuana, whether positive or negative?
To begin with, I just think it was fun and, I used to have a good laugh and I loved that kind of surreal space that you went into, and it was like you just saw reality slightly from a different angle.
Yep.
And everything just became really interesting, more interesting. And where then I think I was just smoking too much and it stopped being fun to being a form of escapism, because I didn't want to deal with certain issues in my life or the way I felt. And so instead of coming home from work or whatever I was doing and going, well, that's really fucked in my life right now and I should really address that, be like, let's have a joint.
Yeah.
And then so then the next day I'd wake up feeling even worse and it would be there all day and I'd know that it's stuff that I needed to address, but I just didn't want to, so I just kept on smoking. And I think that was my biggest problem, is that I had underlying issues that needed to be addressed and I just covered them up with smoking dope. And so for me, like, I think some people can be very functional in their, if they can smoke dope every day and they're fine. For me, I had underlying issues that needed to be dealt with, and so that was my biggest problem, is that I used it as a buffer. And yeah, so and I think that determines on whether it's a positive or negative, and it's very different for everybody.
Sure.
But I think it depends on your own mental well-being.
Do you feel there was a pivotal point in your life plan where you felt things were going downhill?
I was always very motivated and, I like to be fit, and my whole person changed. I didn't exercise, I didn't care about what I ate, I became nocturnal, I'd stay up all night and sleep all day, I was unemployed. So it just changed my whole character, and I just became so unmotivated, and I was stuck in this really horrible, depressed state. And for me, it was just a really bad experience. And I don't regret having done that, but I would never want to do that again.
People talk about, I think, with marijuana use, paranoia and, particular experiences where something just got far too out of control. Did you ever have a particular day or night or anything like that?
Yeah, for sure. Like, I was so paranoid. I remember being at a party one night and there was a bonfire in the backyard, and I was convinced that if there was going to be a massive fire and everyone was going to be trapped in the backyard. Just ridiculous stuff. And, I think I spoke to you before. I just thought that my day was governed by another force and that I had to be in particular places. And, so I was just delusional, like totally delusional and paranoid and unmotivated. So I just don't think it suited me at all.
What was the tipping point, the point at which you decided that your use was too heavy and you needed to stop that?
I was really close with my grandmother, and she died. And I remember I was living in this house in Fitzroy, and I was, you know, it was late in the afternoon, and I just got up, and the house I lived in was disgustingly messy, and my clothes were, you know, disgusting. And my grandma was, you know, someone who really took pride in the way that she looked, and she was very much a lady. And I just had this feeling of her hovering over me in total disgust, and that she was really displeased with how I was living my life. And that was enough for me to want to stop, and I did stop.
Wow.
Because I just thought, wow, someone I really love that isn't here anymore isn't proud of who I am. So yeah, I stopped.
And do you still smoke marijuana today? What's your usage like these days?
No, see, that I would have been 20, like I smoked very strongly for about 3 years, probably 3 or 4 years, where I was smoking every day. And, you know, some days I wouldn't even leave the house, I'd just smoke bongs all day. So, you know, or joints. And so it was pretty dysfunctional, but I haven't smoked since I was 24 or 25 like that. I had probably have occasional joints only in the last couple of years. And like even last year I had a joint, and I just thought, oh, I really love this stuff. I shouldn't smoke it because, it puts you in a nice place, doesn't it?
Yeah. Do you feel like you could smoke marijuana again, or that maybe doing that might cause problems for you again?
No, like I would quite happily have a joint, but I wouldn't want to turn it into an everyday thing.
Yeah.
Because I don't think it would... I don't think it would benefit me. I'm a bit, you know, wary of all of that, you know, just balance.
Beck, do you have any advice that you would give to people if they felt that they were smoking too much marijuana?
I think it's really difficult because, everyone's different and we use things for different reasons, and you've got to kind of look at the crutch of why you're using it and why you're using it a lot. And if it's for the wrong reasons, then maybe you need to change your habits and, you know, face what you're trying to mask by smoking too much. Or I just remember like a conversation I had with a friend, and, you know, he was the same. Like in his early 20s, he smoked a lot and he hung around with lots of people. All your friendships are based around smoking. And he, you know, he's in his late 40s now, but he said, looking back, he said, how sad, you know, that some of these people, they did nothing and all they did was smoke dope. But because you're young, you don't see the seriousness of what these people are stuck into, and that maybe behind them just constantly smoking bongs or joint, there's some really serious issues, you know, that aren't being addressed.
Was there a pivotal tipping point where you felt that you were smoking too much marijuana?
I'd had some stuff happen in my life and I just didn't want to deal with it, so I just kept smoking.
Yeah.
You know, and then it just makes it worse, and then you, you know, when you do stop, you've still got to climb out of that, hole.
Well, thanks, Beck, for sharing your story with us on In Psychedelia.
That's okay.
Thank you to all the contributors to this episode of In Psychedelia. For more details on contributors, including details on the Mollusk album launch gig and album download details, head to insychedelia.podomatic.com or the Facebook group. If you have something to contribute, get in contact with me and we'll get your piece on. Next episode will be a special with recordings from Origins of Consciousness. In the meantime, I regularly post other podcasts and news and issues from across Australia and around the world that may be of interest to you. This is In Psychedelia.